But the whole idea is to dig below the surface to understand what makes this place tick. It's not the glossy marketing tourism veneer. It's actually making connections with people.
Welcome to the New Nomad Podcast, hosted by Alan and Andrew of Insured Nomads. Join us as Alan and Andrew interview and explore the community of people and ideas that embody the nomadic spirit. Tune in to incredible discussions with thought leaders each week that will help you take full advantage of the cross-border remote work lifestyle. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to the New Nomad Podcast. We have Mark Phillips as a guest today of Nomad Stays. We're going to have a really interesting conversation about safe hotels, safe stays, different places to visit, the changes in how people travel. And really, to me, it's incredibly interesting. As I was doing some research, they've opened new locations somewhere like Oman, which it must be an incredibly fun place. I had a great journey once in the past to Jordan. So I know there's overlooked places of the world that we're going to talk about today. And with that, Andrew, you've traveled a lot of places. You know, as we were talking today about Nomad Stays and the different places we like to go, has there been a place that's really surprised you in your travels that you had low expectations and then you get high returns?
You know, I really have enjoyed my times in and out of South Africa. It's one of those places that I definitely would return. I follow the places I've stayed and think, you know, I'm going to go back there. Different regions of the country have a different culture. It's definitely one of those places. You know, one of the places on my bucket list, though, that I haven't been that I would like to go, and has a blend of the adventure traveler to it, and they've just come out with a remote work visa, is Cape Verde or Cabo Verde. And that's one of the places on my list.
And I would assume, Andrew, not only do they have the visa, but they may have great Wi-Fi, because that is almost a prerequisite to our digital nomad audience on that.
It is. And, you know, they've really made some advances there. So I'm looking forward to going there. Speaking Portuguese, it's one more reason why it's on my list.
Well, like I mentioned earlier, my surprise was I had a business trip to Jordan. And from that trip, extended it to go visit the Dead Sea, Petra, some incredible Roman ruins. And one of the surprises of the trip was there was a old church there that predates Columbus that had a map of the world on the floor in tile. And it seemed to have a rough outline of North and South America, leading us to wonder that maybe there was a little bit of an inkling that there was more going on here. Unless somebody really guessed properly, you could see the outline. So that was my surprise. And so why don't we bring Mark in? Mark is traveled. And Mark, actually, this year I saw that you've crossed, 11, 12 borders already this year? I mean, my God.
That's right. Well done. Yes, thank you. We're based, my accent obviously is not European or American. I'm Australian. I'm based in Europe these days. And we got locked down in France for quite a long time. And I'm actually a resident of France these days. But as soon as we could get out, we jumped in the car and went traveling. And so far, 11, 12, technically 13 borders at this point in time this year. And it's been interesting because they're all different.
Is there been any real difference between pre-pandemic when you traveled a lot? I mean, obviously, you've got to have the correct paperwork on COVID. But what's your feeling on this? And as we release this podcast in 2022, and obviously, there's a lot of different thoughts, but having a COVID passport or at least having your card is probably not going to go away. What did you see?
No, it is actually incredibly complex at the moment. And it's largely because the rules are changing so often and the poor people on the borders don't know what the rules are. The people trying to cross the borders don't know what today's rules are, what time they start, all those sorts of things. So there's quite a lot of confusion. Not any real animosity or anything like that. It's just people are trying to do the right things for the country. They're just not quite sure what it is. So there is a lot more extra time taken in many instances, and maybe a little bit more standing your ground, arguing your point, referring to official government documents, things like that, that you might need to build into your repertoire today.
Well, you know, you've hit a lot of countries during the pandemic, but prior to the pandemic, this has been something you've been involved in. I believe 15 years back, you were involved in co-working spaces and traveling, the Silk Road and into Niger and all around the world. I look forward to hearing some of these stories today, but what is your passion and what are you building currently that is sweeping the world?
Okay. So obviously love to travel, and I'm out of the corporate world. I've spent a lifetime in business advisory services and in the technology industries. So I've actually worked for both Microsoft and Apple and KPMG and people like this in my career. But traveling I love. And even before going fully nomad about 6 years ago, I had traveled to nearly 100 countries. And so I had a lot of experience, and some for short periods, some for longer periods. And there's a range of issues that make it more difficult the longer you travel. And one of those is affordability and finding somewhere to work. And the travel industry is focused on leisure tourism. People that go for a week or two, maybe for a weekend, for something short, sharp, they expend a lot of money. Prices are very high. Hotel industries are based on this. But when you've got this lifestyle traveler, as effectively nomads and many others are, you are looking for different things. And you know, particularly with this internet world we're in, we need some Wi-Fi. We need to be able to have quiet rooms to make a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning. We need to cook our own food. We need to wash our own clothes regularly. So the facilities needed are different when you have a lifestyle of traveling compared to a short, sharp, intensive leisure time.
And with Nomad Stays, you provide that. And I think a very important part is when I've looked at your site, the affordability difference of going for a week then looking at your local hotel on a day rate is, and a lot of the people that we have in our nomad and audience, you know, they're very conscious of the cost, but they also want to go somewhere for a month. Yes. I mean, have you seen a lot of changes along those lines? And certainly the difference between staying, you hit upon it, from a week to a month, or maybe even extending through this digital nomad visa period even longer. Sure. What trends have you seen there? And I just love how you're supporting people for longer stays.
Yeah. Well, we pioneered these cost-effective longer stays. So when we launched about 22 months ago, we were the only ones doing month-long affordable stays that you could sort of book easily. And you know, typically these are half the price of the traditional major leisure players, Booking.com, the Expedia Group, Airbnb. So we achieved that literally by negotiating with each of the hotels, saying, listen, you've got empty rooms, nobody's filling it, your off-season's on right now. How about we get you some money? How about we get you some great clients and help spread your risk in terms of leisure or pure business markets, and let's add these additional markets. So literally, that's how we started. And what are we in now? We're in 62, 63 countries, a couple of thousand rooms. People have been applying from around the world. And, you know, literally they're saying, yep, we would love some extra guests. And nomads are saying, oh, wow, I don't need to spend $1,000 a week. I can get $1,000 a month or $500 a month or something even lower. Some of the stuff is down to $250 US a month in Europe for a self-contained, fully internet-provided apartment. Like, it's the insane prices by looking around.
That's incredible. So how do the hotels reach out to you, or do you identify a country that you've had people say, hey, I really want to have Nomad Stays? How do you do that? I mean, it's got to be a certain art about getting this type of hotel to support you, but also to feel comfortable that hotel's the quality and the standard
it is indeed
that you like. I'd love to hear how you do that.
Yeah, no, it's by far the most time-consuming part, most manual part of our business, is to identify and qualify exactly the right sort of properties that we want to have listed. We're not trying to be everywhere in the world for, you know, every property like the major leisure platform. We're just wanting good quality properties that are dependable for this longer style digital nomad remote worker market. So we are, I guess, within a month of opening, COVID hit, and it turned our business off just after we opened. So it's like, oh God, this thing's not going to go away anytime quickly. There's not going to be much traveling, so we better hunker down. We've been bootstrapping, so we know we've got enough money to keep ourselves going, and there's no good marketing when there's no customers. So we built out a lot of the tech, and as a consequence, we started dominating a lot of the search engine optimization for about 30, 40, 50 words. At the same time, the market was booming, so we started getting thousands of visitors coming to our site. And all these properties around the world were desperate for money. They'd heard about this emerging funny market of people that were going to work from home. And then it was workation, and then it was digital nomads. A whole lot of words that describe this longer staying client that is digitally connected. And so they approached us. And every day we get up to 10 properties approaching us. At the same time, there are nomad routes, with the American. There are routes that the nomads are following around the world. There are hotspots which have got great reputation. And so we're reaching out to properties in those areas. And we use a lot of segmentation tech, some hacking of Google Maps and things like this to identify potential candidates of which we reach out to and have a direct conversation with.
What are a couple of those hotspots that you think were not as prevalent before COVID? Because I know that Chiang Mai and, you know, Bali and some of those places were some of the hotspots prior to the pandemic. But now that the pandemic has mobilized people to say, okay, I will work from anywhere, I'm looking for a new place. If you were to pick a couple of cities, what are the first two that come to your mind?
Really, really interesting conversation. You're right. Asia is still very conservative. A lot of the countries are locked down or opening slower than Europe and the US. So places that have taken off, certainly you've seen Madeira Island, part of Portugal, very close to Cabo Verde, which you were mentioning, Andrew, in your opening. Cabo Verde has just started marketing themselves into this arena. They're trying to catch up and follow their sister island of Madeira, but Madeira's done particularly well. Maybe just to some extent taking some business away from Lisbon and Porto, the traditional areas. At the same time, the mainland of Portugal sort of grown a lot in price in the last 12 months, maybe 30, 40, 50% increase in pricing there. We've seen in 2 years, for instance, Bansko in Bulgaria, where there was, you know, 2 years ago, there was a couple of co-working spaces. Today, there are now seven. Arguably, when I was there, up to 500 nomads just in this town of 10,000 people on a semi-regular basis. Ukraine has actually opened up a little bit more. Colombia, down in Central America, is another one of those hotspots. A lot of people in Mexico, but Mexico's been quite a popular place for a long time for US-based remote workers. So I don't think they've actually grown too much, but Colombia, for instance, is opened up. And then you've got your whole visa-related, business-related islands, the Panama and the Bahamas and things like that, which are pushing through very nicely for that US-based remote worker nomad.
So, Mark, we have a whole continuum of listeners. I've got folks that aspire to be a digital nomad or a nomad. We have other folks that we know that are, this is their lifestyle. For those who are listening that are not, they're in their home country, they want to start this experience, is there a couple locations that you would say would be the easiest place, the most comfortable place, perhaps for somebody to go to Nomad Stays and go, if you were going for the first time, what couple locations might you look at that would make an easy start to some of these people who want to start their journey?
Well, I guess if you stick, you've got a couple of choices here. The more Western countries tend to be more developed and easier. Countries with your own language, obviously a little bit easier to get into. Countries that are not too expensive to get into. So, you know, Bulgaria and Romania, couple of amazing places, high levels of English, high levels of community in terms of digital nomads and workers and tech people. Greece is starting to pop through as well. They've got one of these other countries with a nomad sort of visa kicking in. Again, high levels of English. Portugal, also high levels of English. So I'm talking about Europe, and largely because Europe is, one, it's been the center of the world's travel industry for many years. And it's also because of the EU being one of the easiest to travel during this COVID-affected pandemic period.
It's interesting to me because that is so helpful. I mean, but some of the locations you mentioned, I would never have thought of. I would never thought of Bulgaria. That's a great eye opener. And then, of course, we've got others that say, I want the adventure of a lifetime. I want to go somewhere that, you know, is off the beaten track, that, you know, seems like it's an amazing adventure. You have a couple of locations there that may have just opened up or that you felt is more for the hardy traveler, that they should look at those properties. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I thought Jordan was a really easy journey, and everybody thought it was so amazing. But in Jordan, I'm like, it's not. It's actually really, you know, quite easy to get around.
And I guess this is the difference between what you read in the media and what you experience when you go traveling. You know, the first time I went to Rwanda, I'm expecting a third world country, and I'm getting a first world country leading in drones and drone deliveries and adventure and tech. And oh my God, how did I get that so wrong? And when I go adventuring, it's often on the back of a motorbike or a hot air balloon. So, you know.
Ooh, do tell. You know, what are your favorite stories of that? I think you've had, you know, mud mapping in Australia, your home country, all the way to Silk Road and other things. Tell us.
There's lots, Andrew. I mean to say I was out in the middle of the Sahara there back 12, 13 years ago doing a tour of the most amazing parts of the world. And, you know, we've been tracked by gorillas and you know, what became terrorists. And then next minute, Gaddafi was still around. He decided to hold a festival. So we popped back into a city and got adopted by the head of security and taken through these private areas with Gaddafi's talking. So that's one of them. You mentioned South Africa. I was standing next to one of the former presidents there for a while there in South Africa. One of my business trips was really quite a fascinating activity. You know, I by chance looked at the weather while riding the motorbike in Sweden a couple of years ago and said, oh, it's actually warmer up in the Arctic Circle. So I turned left and went to the Arctic Circle on my motorbike. I'd never expected to do that. But these sorts of adventures are everywhere. So we've just opened up a property, just got a property coming online in Kyrgyzstan, for instance, out on one of the lakes outside of Bishkek. So I flew into Bishkek as part of my Silk Road journey a few years ago, and I had a week to organise some visas and wait for a travel colleague, and I went out to the Chinese border and stayed with families that, you know, had been lined up by the receptionist of my Bishkek hotel and discovered areas out there, very gentle, very nice people, not overly expensive, certainly not touristy, but, you know, there's no real significant risk factors out there. You know, people are very good right around the world. Just because you haven't been there or haven't known anybody that's been there in the past doesn't stop you to going exploring.
Right. And Wi-Fi is reliable and not that expensive in Kyrgyzstan, isn't it? In major cities?
No. Again, you sort of travel with backups. You know, we've just looked at a property now. We're going to rent for a month, and they don't have any cable, but we've got a router with us. So we'll just put €20 worth of unlimited data into a 4G router, and we'll be online for a month. We had no problems with phones out in Kyrgyzstan. And to be honest, I've sat in the middle of the parts of the desert in Australia and watched Netflix because the internet signal was better there than what it is in the centre of the city sometimes. You know, internet's actually not too hard these days. You might have to look around. You might have to, in some towns like up in Agadez in Niger, you know, to go to a co-working space rather than a hotel. So your time zones for working are a little bit affected. You know, you might not be getting on the phone at 2 o'clock in the morning to call a client back in your home country.
That reminds me something, Mark. If someone's listening to this thinking, okay, I like all what I hear. I haven't done this yet, but I'm thinking it's possible now that their job allows them to do so. How would you guide someone to find a co-working space? If their hotel doesn't have the thickest walls, or they're not in an apartment where they can sit at the dining room table and work at whatever hour they need to, how would they find a co-working space in a town that they're going to?
Obviously, this is a critical component of the lifestyle. So we've added it into Nomad Stays. We have about 500 co-working sites listed on our platform today, and we purposely target properties near co-working spaces and vice versa. We've got them highlighted on our map. So when you're looking at a property and looking at the map, you'll see where the nearest co-working sites are. And what's happening is in the marketplace, properties are changing. There's a level of innovation kicking in as the market's changing, coming out of this sort of COVID-affected world. And so hotels are opening up their own co-working spaces. They're putting in secondary screens. They're putting in telephone booths. They're enhancing the soundproofing of different walls and rooms. Restaurants, which are a difficult area, are being morphed into work areas now. So we're seeing quite a lot of that around many parts of the world.
It's interesting because that's one of the big questions we get, and we're trying to also build community with our customers is, you know, I'm excited about going overseas. I'm going to have great Wi-Fi. I'm going to stay at Nomad Stays for a couple of weeks, but I want to meet some folks to travel with and hang out with. And co-working spaces are so important, and maybe some people that I'll travel with. But I'll mention just as an aside, when I've traveled globally and I'm with Australians, I tend to have the best time. I don't know. Could you help us out culturally? What makes you guys and gals so great to travel with beyond you enjoy beer like I do, most Australia? But there's something great about the spirit that you bring and your Australian cohorts, New Zealand, too, I'm including them. fantastic people to travel with.
Yeah, I think relatively small population countries like New Zealand, Australia, Pacific Islands, there's a natural tendency to be relatively friendly, and you don't have a general supply of stuff. So you've got to try harder for a lot of everyday sorts of matters. And that just means you become a little bit more adventurous. Australia, being 25 million people, is the same physical size as continental US. So that means everybody is spread out a long way. There's not a lot of people to call upon. And so you tend to rely on the neighbours, your friendships, the towns a lot more than when there are commercial systems to supply you with items and so forth. So I think that sort of permeates through these cultures, this level of adventure, this level of curiosity. Again, it's relatively more difficult, more expensive for Australians to go travel the world because they're such a long way away from everywhere. So, you know, you don't get a $50 flight to the next country from Australia. So people tend to travel less and but more intensively, and so they go for longer, and they got to see more. They want to catch all of the world. So they're used to traveling long distances and long hours. So you just sort of become, you're a natural traveler, I guess, once you're in Australia.
Do you think that people should stay longer in destinations they go to? And if so, how long do you think they should stay in a city?
It's an interesting one, Andrew. It depends on personalities a lot. There is a growth in effectively an expat market. People that are staying for a year at a time, there's a range of nomad visas you're mentioning that allow you to stay 6-12 months at a time, but they're not really travelers. And there are other people that like to travel every month. They might change countries every month because they're getting their fix of something new. I guess what we tend to find is that most more established nomads will stay in a country 2-3 months at a time. They may move within that country to experience different cultures in different parts of that country. But the whole idea is to dig below the surface to understand what makes this place tick. It's not the glossy marketing tourism veneer. It's actually making connections with people. And the longer you stay and the more open you are to both putting yourself out there and making conversation with people, the quicker you get established. And I guess that's one of the tricks long-term travelers have found themselves doing it. You know, we were down the pub last night. We ran into a Kiwi here in Europe. Haven't spoken to Australians or Kiwis for a while. The pandemic's pretty much shut those countries for a couple of years now. And sure enough, we've fallen back into our old language, our old culture. Next minute, we've been introduced to the owner of the hotel, who've introduced us to another remote worker, a chief operating officer for a software company out of Germany. And, okay, so we've just gone and explored another apartment to bring on board. We're swapping some technology, supply issue criteria, tax-related issues. You know, suddenly the conversation is deep, yeah. And we're engaged with the community by chance. But it's not really by chance. We're tickling that to try and find people of a like mind.
And of course, you know, the number one success factor I seem to see in people who travel is that adventurous spirit and intellectual curiosity.
Yes.
You know, the folks, as we call it in the U.S., maybe you say the same thing, folks who want to get out of the bubble. You're not staying at the Ritz-Carlton when that city, you're getting out into culture on that. And with that it leads to a question we ask all of our guests, and we get really enlightening answers. You know, for the folks listening today, could you share an overlooked person, place, or experience you would suggest our listeners discover? I know you've given us a few things already, but so we're going real deep here, but we'd love something that's overlooked, in your opinion.
Well, the Pacific Islands are really quite amazing places. Central Asia, often overlooked, but the cultural depth of these, what were mega cities in the Middle Ages along the Silk Road, certainly worthwhile exploring. Russia is such an amazing mixture of places that many people haven't visited. It's relatively hard from a visa perspective, or has been, but there's such cultural depth there, let alone art and music and things that are so different than what you might see on the television. It actually doesn't matter where you are. You can stay in your own country and find these pockets of amazing culture and community and landscapes and nature, whatever your bent is. sports, activities, it's all there, but you've got to go looking. And so this is where this curiosity kicks in. It becomes a motivating factor. Oh, I haven't been down this road. I haven't been to this country. I haven't been to this town. But for me, I can't wait to go back and do more of Russia and Central Asia. I also want to get to Antarctica. It's the last continent for me, and I'm looking to find a way to open up a Nomad Stays in Antarctica.
So where can people learn more about Nomad Stays? It's really, to me, I've looked at the website and more about yourself too. It's such an opportunity for you out there listening, folks, that to go stay somewhere for that period of time to really have a greater understanding. I know, Andrew, you and I think we're going to avail ourselves a remote work experience, hopefully sooner rather than later, where we go stay and go for a month somewhere interesting. And by the way, your comment on Russia is spot on. It's I went to St. Petersburg, but you're right, the visa process where they need to know every family member you've ever had that may have touched Russia, but it's worth the effort.
Indeed.
Would love to hear where people can learn more about Nomad Stays and yourself.
Okay, so Nomad Stays is an online portal, and you'll find us at nomadstays.co. The co is an important part because it's sort of implying the cooperation and the community component of what we're doing. So nomadstays.co, you'll find us all over the web, all on social, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. We've got stories, we've got business, we've got tax, we've got ambassadors spreading around the world. We've got all the mechanisms to help make your lifestyle a lot easier as you go traveling and make it a softer landing when you arrive in a strange country.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. Really, really appreciate your comments today. A really big learning experience. Andrew, we always like to take it away with what you've learned today. Share.
You know, that last bit when Mark was sharing about even finding it in your home country reminds me of traveling with you, Alan, and discovering a public tennis court area in Wilmington, Delaware. And, you know, it took me back to helping an Argentine friend that landed in Rio when I was spending time there, because he was like, I wish I could play tennis. And I was like, well, I know where. And some great clay courts that were well maintained. Yeah. Sure, it was for a nice price, but very close to his house that he didn't know existed, just right there. And, just finding those things that you're passionate about and just having your eyes wide open, getting off, getting out, going down that road that you've never discovered. I'm actually doing that this afternoon because I have a friend visiting. When you have someone visiting you, you often see through different eyes. When you go to a place that you've been over and over and you get to show someone else, you see things that you haven't seen. So his statement there kind of fueled that thought within me of, okay, that's got to be reawakened within me. Go down that dirt road, see what's there.
And, you know, Andrew, you touched upon something else, and Mark did too, is when you travel with people you like, people that make you laugh, people who are adventurous, it makes even the most mundane day exceptional. And sometimes you go down that dirt path and you find absolutely nothing but a dirt path that hits a dead end. But then you laugh about it together because you had that time together. So, you know, we've talked a bit about people who travel fast, people who travel slower, take their time. I think what's great that we see here is if you go somewhere and you stay a little longer, you can savor the experience, meet more people, and really have a greater understanding of the different cultures. So fantastic conversation today. So to our Nomad audience, we hope you share this with others. We would love it if you left a great review. Please travel safe, stay in touch, and we appreciate your listening today. All the best. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the New Nomad Podcast, where we bring together an incredible community of people and ideas that embody the nomadic spirit. Please remember to subscribe and leave a review. For more amazing tips to help you take advantage of the cross-border lifestyle, please visit us at insurednomads.com/podcast. See you next week.